Oh, whoops. Are we live, guys? Oh, nobody for testing or anything? No? No?
No banners.
All right. Okay. Well, good evening, folks, and welcome to the Trinity Chims. And we have a special guest tonight. As usual, it's myself, Eric Knott from Reed Celtic, and we have Joe McHugh from Video Celts, as always. And in the bottom right, we have James Forrest from the Celtic blog, and we have our guest this evening, Pat McPhee, aka Old Heat. So Pat's going to discuss a few things about Celtic and about the protests and FSR and a few other bits and pieces throughout the show. So we have, as usual, a jam-packed agenda ahead of us again tonight. So we had an interesting day yesterday up at Firhill. I think if we look at yesterday's protest in comparison to our protest at Kilmarnock, it was a hell of a lot more organized and a hell of a lot more impactful. However, there was a couple of guys in the stands who pretended they didn't see what was going on, busy tapping away on their mobile phones, obviously texting each other, and they didn't seem to notice what was going on across the pitch from them. So that was a pretty interesting reaction to what happened. You would think that these guys would stare down their aggressors if they felt they had nothing to hide. So it was definitely an interesting reaction, which we'll talk about throughout the show. The game itself, excellent from a Celtic point of view. No two ways about it. We definitely have a star player in Sebastian Tunecti. There's no doubting that. He's looking very, very strong on the left wing, taking players on, no fear. So for me, he's definitely out of all the transfers. Even like Nygren had a good start, but I think out of all the transfers that we've brought in, he was definitely the star guy, and he is going to, I'd say, set the left side of the field alight over the course of the coming season. I think Michael Stewart made a very good point. Michael Stewart's commentary at the game yesterday. Obviously, I was watching the game on Premier Sports, and Michael Stewart's commentary was excellent. And one point that he made, which was fantastic, was he said, when you consider that Sebastian Tunecti cost $5.5 million, you didn't break the bank, you can see you've got a quality player from Hammarby. He said that, why could we not have had him in for the Kairat game? What was stopping us from having Sebastian Tunecti in for the Kairat game? So to be fair, it was a valid point. And his take on it was that if he had been in for that game, then he definitely would have done damage on the left wing. And there's no two ways about that, looking at the way he played yesterday. I mean, it was his second start and he had a goal already. He has devastating pace. He has a good eye for a pass. He has no fear of taking players on, and he's exactly what we would have needed. And it was the snail's pace that our board does business at that caused us to lose out on the Champions League because we didn't have him in place. So I will go to Joe first to get Joe's opinions and see what his thoughts were on the protest yesterday and also the performance. Ultimately, a 4-0 win in the end. It was quite comfortable. Partick Thistle didn't put up much of a challenge to us, really. They started brightly, but it petered out very quickly. So, Joe, your thoughts on yesterday?
Thank goodness for Michael Stewart when you get balloons like Stephen Craigan. And Emma Dodds asked Brendan Rodgers a question like, do you think a few wins will win the supporters round? I mean, these outsiders, legacy media, they haven't a clue. They think this is about results. This is a fan protest movement that it's slightly related to results, i.e. Kairat Almaty, but over the piece, it's not really to do with results. And that just screws them. They can't comprehend it. Michael Stewart was good. First 10 minutes of the match, he was explaining to Rory Hamilton. I mean, he's another balloon that would just be telling you about football results and the supporters are unhappy. Well, Celtic have lost one domestic goal in 7 matches this season. They've lost one goal in 9 matches because they never lost any over 210 minutes to Kairat. So, thank goodness for Michael Stewart. I thought the protest was absolutely fantastic. The Jackie Husband stand at Firhill is the perfect theatre if you want to protest. So that was an unobstructed stand. I think it holds about 5,000-6,000 folk. It was a nice, bright, sunny day. And despite our text-talking executives playing at Candy Crush because they knew that there was a protest going on, the protest came over brilliantly. And it was even quite clever in that they delayed the start and it didn't take very long. Unlike the Union Bears, when they interrupted things after 5 minutes, it was about a 1 minute delay to the start of the match, and that further emphasised the point. So, well played to the Celtic fans collective. They're a hell of a lot more efficient than the PR company and whatever messaging is coming out of Celtic PLC, and that's volunteers. But the thing is, they guys are interested. They guys are emotionally invested. It's not a job. Nicholson and Mackay over at home last night, throwing their phones in the corner, they're mowing and then got on with their life, whereas the guys involved in the Celtic fans collective, they're planning their next move. So it was a great impression they made at Fir Hill, and it'll be interesting what they have lined up for Celtic Park on Saturday, and hopefully there's plenty of protests in the main stand around them, and it's not just looked on as being some ballsy mob in the corner, the young team, but everything about the collective is impressive. Their comments, their communications are bang on, so fair play to them, and well done the team. They beat Partick Thistle 4-0, as you would expect. There's a few good signs in that match, but we won't read too much into it. I gave Kieran Tierney 90 minutes and a few others, but a far better benchmark, to use that old phrase, will be Wednesday, and I wouldn't be expecting a 4-0. I think a nothing each in Red Star would be a good result, but on Sunday, it couldn't have been scripted any better. On the park and off the park, it went very well. Cheers.
Yeah, no doubt about it. It really did go very well. And I think as well, some of the other players, look, I know that Iheanacho didn't score, but he looked lively and he played some very decent balls. He played his part in the game too. And even when Balakwish was brought on, he looked a lot more comfortable on the left side because obviously that's his natural side. And he was involved in the goal from Luke McCowan. So I thought, again, while he didn't get much opportunity to make a big impression, he played a much better role than he did in the two previous games. But I have to say, overall, things are starting to gel with the team. And I think, you know, we could start seeing the makings of a very good side once again that will or should comfortably win the league if they keep going the way that they are. So I'm going to go over to Pat, since he's our guest, and we'll have to involve him just before you, gents. So, well, first Pat, thing
what I'll say about the display is, you know, you've got to remember, guys, I work in the Foreign Office kind of thing. I know a bit about diplomacy, and there's that phrase about winning hearts and minds. And I know it'll win the hearts and minds of the support, but I don't think it'll win the hearts and minds of the people in the stand. And when you talk about, when the open letter talks about dialogue, you know, a dialogue is impossible. Would you invite somebody in to talk to you if they were shouting outside, calling you names and making all the bad-mouthing you? You know, would you invite them in to talk? In that sense, I think it's anti, I don't think it meets the purpose. And that's the point I'd like to think. What is the purpose? I think that, put it this way, don't get me wrong, I'm absolutely clear that we need to do something to stop the division. I think I said that last time. I can't remember now, I've spoken up with many blogs, but I think they must, the things to stop division. And anything that increases division is not good for anybody. I'm not talking about the board, I'm talking about everybody, because you can't get away from it. Everything in Celtic's connected. One thing affects the other. So, for the point of view of that, you know, this isn't the way I would go about it, put it that way, you know. That doesn't mean to say I'm right. It's just saying that that's not the way I go about it. As regards to the game, I'm glad you mentioned, is it Iheanacho? I have a problem for pronouncing his name.
Iheanacho.
Iheanacho, we got right. I actually was watching it and I thought, wow. I was very impressed with his hold-up play, you know. Yeah. And then see the 1-2 that he played, you know. And it was only when I went back and I watched that repeat and I saw it again and actually made a comment in one of the blogs and they got something that says, I'm glad you said that. I noticed it as well. And you did mention it. So if we've now got a winger that can cause damage and we've got a centre forward that can sort of, you know, hold the ball up, then I think that we're, you know, we're certainly making a bit of progress. Young Donovan still is doing well for a young lad. I don't quite see him the same way I saw Kevin Tierney when he first arrived. You know, after about two games, I couldn't believe it. I thought, wow, that kid's brilliant, you know. But Donovan's certainly got a bit of that element about him. The winger, Tuneke, again, pronunciations. Yeah, he's a good buy. And on the point about the delay, I've actually seen other folk coming back and saying, well, actually, his club wouldn't let him go. But the answer that came back to that is Celtic should have offered more money to get him, you know. So I think that's the, to me, I think that's where the cusp of the debate is that we know, and looking at the conversations that, you know, he said, he spoke to his manager understood, you know, and eventually they decided. And I don't know if it was after they were knocked out of the conference that he then became free, you know. And I don't know the time scale to say he was there, he wouldn't have been there quickly enough. And I think what I'm saying is I always say, I don't really know enough to actually say for sure. But certainly, and this goes back to it, and it goes back to the main point, which really is how much money are Celtic going to spend to meet the fans' aspirations, and why don't they? Yeah. Okay, I'm done.
Okay, fine. Look, I mean, interesting points, and you know, this is the reason we have guests on, to get an alternative opinion. I mean, look, I'll be honest. In my view is that I think the Celtic Fans Collective, which is come together to form this protest overall, is a good idea. The problem is, and I think what's upsetting or has upset the fans for so long is there has been no communication from the board. Mm-hmm. And nobody seems to want to communicate with the fan base. And I think it's got to the point now where the fan base are forcing the issue and they want the board to communicate. And the seven questions that were submitted to the board were very valid questions. And the honourable thing would have been to answer those questions. But I think the issue is that they don't have the answers. They don't have structured answers to come back to us. So therefore, there's a lot of fluff coming back in the statements that are coming from the club. So yeah, look, everybody's going to have a difference of opinion in this. And
yes,
that's why we're such a diverse support. So, you know, and all opinions are welcome, and that's the main reason that we want to talk about these things. So, James, I'll move over to you. James obviously will have a fairly different opinion to you, Pat. So I can't wait.
This is one of the reasons why I've always loved this guy. This guy is one of the most genuine, honest, dyed in the wool. Never say die Celtic fans I've ever met in my entire life. And we disagree on so much, but we agree on that. And I know that about him. I know that this guy's got as many critics as some of us around here have. And I can't understand them at all. I can't understand why they criticise a guy who has done so much for the Celtic support and has done so much to push the causes that all those guys have been banging on about reform and agenda and regime change at SFA and all that for years. This guy's been at the lead of that campaign. He's the man, as far as I'm concerned. And now I can completely disagree with everything.
Tell me what you really mean.
No, I understand what you're saying about
dialogue. I know.
I understand what you're saying about dialogue. But what something happened this summer that I think has taken dialogue off the table for a wee while. When the people who are in charge of the club deliberately, willfully weaken the club, deliberately, right? Because whatever agenda there is against the manager, whatever issues they have with the manager, they don't have any more right to sit at the top of your house. And finally, a lot of different concerns and worries and frustrations have all come together and coalesced, and something has been born, and something very valuable, I think, and something that will be good for all of us in the future. I think fans have realised that they're not powerless and that they're not voiceless, and that finally they've got something unifying. And I think that life is going to get very uncomfortable for the people in charge of Celtic. And that is not before time. These people have had a lot of chances over the years to have constructive dialogue, and they have flubbed it every time. They're not really interested in constructive dialogue, except a wee hand-picked group who come in for the tea and biscuits and get patronised. And to be fair, some of them who sat around that table the last time realised they were being patronised and weren't very happy about it. Made a very big deal about some of the nonsense that they heard around that table the last time.
But James, sorry to say, that wasn't dialogue. Dialogue's a two-way process. No, that wasn't dialogue. Dialogue's a two-way process. Well, both sides listen to the other. I know that's what I'm saying to you. That's my point. There is no dialogue. Yeah, we agree.
Communicate with facts in any meaningful way. So something like this was always going to happen. You can ignore people only so long before there is protest, before there is anger. And that's what they've done. And we're in a place now where dialogue in the short term is not possible. Because they won't change
their position. Agree with you.
They're not going to change their position and the fans aren't going to change theirs. And eventually something will give. I'll tell you who it won't be, who gives it will not be us. So we're going to have to get something. Whether it's some kind of clarifying statement in the AGM, whether it's a resignation, whatever it may be, a retirement, they can call it whatever they like, I don't care as long as it happens. They're going to have to move towards the fans a few steps before any kind of dialogue can even start. And until then, there's going to be protest and they're just going to have to suck it up like big boys.
The way I'm looking at this actually is that I actually think there's an awakening taking place.
I hope so.
On both sides. Because I think, you know, the one thing, Joe, I know you laugh, but the people that run Celtic aren't stupid. You know, they know which side their bread's buttered. If they cut you guys off, there's no Celtic. So they're going to have to look at themselves. And that's going to take a while to happen because there's no quick fix to this.
No, there is not.
There isn't a quick fix. And what they have to do is to try to find, is that enough? I don't know what I said, but there needs to be some trust-building steps taking place. I would love that to come for Celtic because it would tell me that they are waking up, but I haven't seen any sign yet, you know. So, but getting back to the point about the protest and the rest of it, I just think that they are an awakening. And that can be difficult for people. You know, suddenly you realise that, oh, wait a minute, the ball game's changed and they have to come to sort of terms with that. So I think it's, my point is we need to take advantage of the fact that folk have woken up to, put it this way, I woke up to years ago running Res 12 because I could see what was going on,
you know.
So it wasn't a surprise to me. And that thing I had about a house divided, I saw it coming years ago. And that was what was driving me, is to stop the division harming everybody, because division harms everybody. Because what will happen if we don't get it right? We'll end up going to war with each other.
Much division except between us and them right now.
Aye.
And our side seems to be a general outbreak of unity for the first time that I can ever remember. And everybody putting aside egos and grievances and beefs and arguments to all work in the same side. It's tremendous. One of the most encouraging things about this. And it gives a real shot in the arm, mate, to some of the ideas you've been talking about.
And that was dialogue, James. What you were witnessing there, right? To me, that's true dialogue. Because everybody was sitting around the table prepared to listen to the views of everybody else and then come to a consensus. That's dialogue. And that's what we need to achieve. It's some way or other. I don't know how, but we need to achieve that. If we want to be going and join Celtic and talk about the football and not talk about all the stuff that's going on, you know, that would be, you know, to me, I would die happy if I saw everybody dancing together. Not with the same people. I wouldn't ask you to go that far. No, and I don't even mean us. I'm talking about the board individuals. But I do think an opportunity is here, you know. I think both sides only. Well, I certainly think the support's woken up. I think the board are probably, you know, woken up as well. I hope so. And something positive will come out of that, you know. So there's a diplomatic answer, if you like them. You know, but I always like to be balanced in things and how I see things. That's it.
That's fair enough, Pat. And it's, you know, it's exactly what we need on the show as well to you know, to open up the discussion, the dialogue and these kinds of things. But I think a lot of people are starting to see that there is, as some have said, an awakening. And you see, the problem was, I think, up to a point, there was too many factions within the fan base that weren't kind of willing to pull together. And what I feel has happened now with the Celtic Fans Collective is that is bringing the whole fan base together. It's unified the whole fan base together. And what you have now is you have a situation where you have the fan base more united than I feel it's been in a long, long time. Mm-hmm. And then added to that, you have huge support for the manager and the team. And what it has done is it has isolated the board member and it goes back to the point of what you said. They have to react at some point. They can't keep ignoring this in the hopes that it will go away, because it isn't going away. It's just going to get bigger and bigger. And that's the issue. They need to face up to this. They need to, as you've said, start dialogue. They need to communicate, and it has to be a two-way thing. And they have to start listening to what the fan base want. But I think the biggest concern here is these guys are not capable of taking Celtic forward any longer. And I think that's the big issue.
You've just set a thought going in my head, and I need to get it out before I forget, because at that age I start to do that. And what was the point I was going to? What was the point I was going to make? I was talking about the board. Listen, James, believe you me, where I'm at the moment. I'm going even further from it. You were talking there about the board taking steps. I have got it now. Is what I think would help is the board just coming out with a simple statement saying, "We hear you."
Yeah.
We hear you. It's going to take us 3, 4, 5 months to get this sorted out. And what I would also do is to say, and I would actually invite some of you guys in. And just get them to talk, you know, and talk, man, one-to-one to them. As
right
people.
Hmm?
What? You know. I'm logging in, you know. Not with my record. but you see, I'm getting it. If they just come out and said, "We hear you," you know, give us a bit of time. And Joe Shakes, he said, because Joe doesn't trust, you've got to end up trusting at some point. Otherwise, you're just going to keep going down the same road and run the same circles, you know. And I've actually come up.
How can you trust them after what they've done to you?
Because I treat people as human beings, as people that make mistakes, you know.
You think they made mistakes?
No, they, you know, I've come to put it this way. Of course, you don't want to go where that goes. I take experiences. My old man used to say to me, and he was right, never trust anybody because you'll always be disappointed. And it's one bit of his advice I've never really taken, because I've always thought maybe if I trust somebody, something different will happen. And if it turns out that they don't meet the trust, then I just think, okay, what can I do next? But, you know, but put it this way, I trust in my own ability to handle things. You know, I trust in myself to think, I think I'm doing the right thing. And I bet you if you were talking to both on the other side, they would think they're doing the right thing as well, because everybody does. We don't do the wrong things, deliberate. We tell ourselves what we're doing is the right thing. And I've done plenty of things in my life that I thought was the right thing to do, only discover I was kidding myself on. You know, so I think it's do the right thing, but also be conscious of that you might not be doing the right thing.
Well, that's the kind of realization I think some of these people I make.
Yeah, yes, that's exactly it. And I think if the message were to get back, that put it this way, you guys do want to talk, you do want to have dialogue, but they've got to give you some indication that they're willing to take it as well. And I think that's where we have to start building bridges, you know, in some way or other. But just in listening to Eric talking there about, no statement for the board, I just thought, aye, why don't they just come out and say, "We hear you," you know. We are working on things. We cannot divulge it just now because it's business sensitive and things like that, like stock exchange and the rest of it. But, you know, believe us. And in the meantime, carry on doing, if you want to run a membership service, fine. You know, it may actually improve relationships between the support and ourselves. Carry on with that. That's the sort of step I would sort of go to next. Is, you know, having got the attention and waking everybody up and saying, "Right, guys, come on, this is where we're going to go." You know, right, I've shut up now because I've talked too much.
Okay, well, look at that. That lead us into our next point in the agenda fairly smoothly. So one of the points I kind of wanted to make is there has been an assessment of the accounts doing the rounds from the Sentinel cells from a guy called the Gombean Man. I took that apart today in an article. I wasn't overly enamored by the whole thing, and I feel that a big part of it was scaremongering. A big part of it was to make fans think that if we don't spend money, the club is going to go backwards and that it's going to result in downsizing. And I think a lot of that is idle threats. I think a lot of it also, part of the statement that this guy made is that there's a lot of hysteria and un-Celtic-like behaviour. And I think that's a very wrong assessment of what's going on, because the fans of United, there is no hysteria. This isn't hysteria. This is organisation. There's a big difference between hysteria and organized. Hysteria you will find across the city in spades, but you won't find hysteria with the way things are being organized, especially in the Celtic fans, you know, the way the Celtic fans have come together for this. I think probably the crux of the matter here, and one of the biggest issues here, is that for 20 years, the club has operated the same way, and there does not seem to be any willingness to deviate from that way of operation whatsoever. I think that's a big, big issue. So, I'll go to Joe and I'll ask you, Joe. I mean, did you see this statement and from this guy, the Gombean Man? And what was your take on this? I mean, did you feel that a lot of it was just scaremongering to try and? I felt it was coming from, you know, it was very pro board and it was very much from a board perspective. Had you seen it?
I haven't seen it, but I know that there's quite a few sources now starting to get out and trying to niggle away at the Celtic support that's come together against the way the club's been run. And for Pat, having a chat, going tree-hugging with Peter Lowe is a complete waste of time. The man treats the Celtic support with absolute contempt, and that's why he's got his two stooges sitting in there as CEO and Chief Financial Officer. He can't stand the Celtic support. So if you think that you can go tree-hugging, tea and biscuits, we'll sort it out and we hear
Joe,
you.
Joe, can I just say, how stupid do you think I am? How stupid do you think I am? I'm not asking anybody to tree-hug Peter Lowell. It's pedrophobia, I call that. Right? Lowell's not, if you like, Lowell's part of the problem. The problem is the policy and how it's executed, which Lowell has done badly. But the key thing is not the individuals, it's the policy. If the policy's unsound, let's change it, which is what Eric was talking about. But let's find out why the policy is what it is before we go and One of the things that really, well, you can tell my anger on it, about Lowell getting back, I was like, this is just going to make the job of healing division a chasm. It was, I think, did I say it here last week? I can't remember. I said it was one of the silliest decisions I think that Dermot Desmond made. He should have been, and you know, I'm actually thinking, see if God don't help me, see if Peter Lowell passed away, there'd still be some supporters that said he's behind it. His ghost is hanging around about Parkhead, you know. So, Joe, I'm sorry, I apologize for losing the ride because it's not really you. It's, I think, that Peter Lowell's role has prevented looking at what the real problem is, you know.
Would you not say, Pat, that he's an extremely divisive figure?
Oh, absolutely. That's what I'm saying. When I saw he was coming back, and I was getting, Phil McGillivan, I was getting assurances from Phil that no way was he coming back. He had a contact in Dublin, and, you know, no way was he coming back. And I just couldn't see any circumstances under which Dermot Desmond would reappoint him. And I still don't know why. And nobody does, because we don't know if it was to look after the remaining child abuse cases. We don't know if it's because of his contacts with UEFA. You know, we just don't know why.
Well, what good are his contacts with UEFA to us at the moment?
Well, no, but try to work back. Unless he was put back to keep an eye on the policy. And don't forget, this policy isn't Peter Lowell's policy, it's the board's policy. The policy was formed about 2008 between Brian Quinn and Dermot Desmond. Peter Lowell was introduced to execute it. That means carry it out. So if you want to know whether Brino really solve our problems, look at the policy, look at the justification for it, and then decide, and then look at how well it's been executed. I think everybody else, it's clearly been executed badly, you know, in the sense that we are where we are.
It's clearly outdated as well.
And part of that as well, I think, is the lack of communication, which everybody agrees on is poor, you know. I think if we had better communications, an awful lot of what we're witnessing wouldn't have happened, you know. So to me, as you can tell, it's a crick point with me. I know Peter Lobos, you know, is a big bet noir, whatever it is to the support, but to me, it just stops people looking at what's really happening. See, you fix a problem, you know what the problem is. Right.
So let me ask you a straight question.
He's only part of the problem. Well,
let me ask you
the problem, actually.
A straight question, Pat, okay?
Yeah.
Would Celtic be a better place with or without him?
Oh, absolutely. I can't wait till the day goes, because then people will start looking at the policy.
Right, but if he's the guy who's driving the policy, there doesn't seem to be anybody else in the club
who seems to know how to
change the policy.
No, that's two different aspects. I think changing the policy is not Peter Lowell's role. He's only one of a number of the members of the board, which takes us back to the other point. They do need a clear out. There's no doubt about it. They need a clear out, you know. But it's how we bring about that clear out. And you're not going to get a clear out by telling people they're a shower or whatever they are. You've got to sort of have something to put in their place that they'd be happy to leave behind them. And that's where we should be. To me, that's where what the aim should be, is to actually say, okay, once we've got them out, because questions that have been seen asked as people are saying, okay, we get rid of them. Who's going to take their place?
But this is a
valid question, you know.
It is a valid question, Pat. But there seems to be this impression out there at the moment, okay, that there is nobody capable of taking their place or doing a better job. Now, the UK is a big place. Scotland's a big country. There are many qualified people who could do this job. I mean, there was one extremely qualified guy in Dominic Mackay who was capable of doing the job. And obviously he was far too forward thinking for the board. And that's why he lost his job or he left. So, like, I don't subscribe to the opinion that there isn't anybody else who can do the job. How do the clubs that rotate their CEOs and rotate their chairman and so on and so forth after a period of six, seven, 8 years, how do they do it? Why can't we do it?
Because it's the way Celtic do things. It's the old, I mean, you know.
And that's the problem.
And exactly, because they don't go outside. It's they promote inside, they promote, if you like, their countrymen. I'm not getting, you know what I mean? Dermot is appointed. Martin O'Neill, Irish background. You know, Brendan Rodgers, Irish background. They don't look well enough. But when you say about who they put in their place, did you watch the Axum interview with, is it Paul? What was his second name? Is it Paul Smith? Looked it up a minute ago. You should watch that, because that guy used to work inside with Celtic. And when I was listening to him, only halfway through, I thought to myself, that bloke knows what the problems are. And he picks up on stuff that I've noticed for being inside Celtic during the rest of 12 days and that. About capacity. The capacity to actually do what needs to be done. And the capacity, I mean, the right number of people and the right number of people with job roles to actually deliver it. There was none of that. It was all left to Peter Lowell. So that needs a total change. It shouldn't be, and it shouldn't have been one man. But what I observed when I was there was, you know, this isn't how I would run the place. And what I would do, like I said it before, I would, you know, charge you. You're a programmer. You go and program. I can't program to save my life. You know, COBOL stuff like that. You can operate a computer. Fine. You can do that. So you find the people with the right skill sets to meet the objectives of the policy, which is formed by the strategy, which is a result of the vision, which is the result of knowing the purpose.
So what you're saying, Pat, effectively is nepotism doesn't work in the policy.
Yeah, that's one way of putting it. That's a bloody good way of putting it, Eric. Thank you.
Yeah.
Oh shit.
Okay. Oh, well, you're okay. You're okay, James. You've been a bit quiet there. You need to have a viewpoint on this, and then we need to move on to the FSR
subject. I'm going to shut up now. Sorry, James.
No. Oh, good. somebody mentioned them. I think people are waiting on the historical analogy here tonight. Yes. The imperial families in Rome ruled absolutely. And the guy who posted that is right. Dictators don't give up their power. And the problem is that when you talk about the policy and you talk about Peter Law as being separate, you are being slightly naive, perhaps, because sometimes the man is the policy. And that's certainly how it has worked in dictatorships and one-man shows for time immemorial. You talk about a system at Celtic Park where he did everything. Maybe that's because he insisted on micromanaging every single decision and did not want anyone in any position of authority at Celtic Park who either questioned him or defied him. And the problem that we have right now is in no small part because very few of our fans differentiate the policy from the person. And that was the risk we took when we brought him back, and it's one of the reasons we never should have done it.
Who brought him back?
Well, he's part of the problem as well.
No, yeah. No, thank you, because that's where you're starting to get it. Why did he bring him back?
Why we call him the absentee landlord, right? Mm-hmm. He governs from afar, but he does not do it directly. He has his people who do it at Celtic on his behalf, yeah. Right? And the reason that we have a boardroom that is pitiful and weak and unable to articulate any kind of plan is because he has filled that boardroom with yes men and stooges. And Peter is at the head of the team. And he's still at the head of the team.
I don't disagree with any of that.
The policy and the man are the same thing.
But don't forget, Brian Quinn and Desmond got together and decided that Celtic couldn't go and spend the money they were spending, haven't got to Seville because they got £36 million of debt and they wanted to change it. They got rid of Martin O'Neill, they brought Gordon Strachan in. But Dermot Desmond and Brian Quinn were the ones that decided we can't keep going like this. And what they did do, and they gave it to Peter to execute it. And he's executed it. Financially, he's executed it brilliantly. But in football support terms, financially. You cannot argue that he's not kept Celtic in the game, right? You can't argue that Celtic
in the game without Peter Law. Any competent chief executive could have done what Peter Law's done.
I'm not saying they couldn't. I'm just saying that. Would you call it? I'm not going to turn this into a defending Peter Lowell thing because I've got no reason to defend Peter Lowell. Absolutely none. The mistake that Desmond made was leaving the run into Peter Lowell and playing golf.
And Peter Lowell has been doing it ever since.
But Dermot Desmond says, this is how I want you to run it. That's what's the thing. He's the one who said, this is how I want it to run. I want it to run sustainably.
Other people
take
the policy.
Which is to run sustainably.
One person runs it the way he wants it all.
Do you not think that's what the policy is, to run Celtic sustainably?
Well, the man's a policy. The man dictates the policy. The policy and the man are inseparable from each other.
No, he executes the policy and he's doing it badly.
There's a very valid point there from Kevin Gallagher. Dermot Desmond does not own the club. And he shouldn't act like he owns the club. He's the major shareholder, but he does not own the club.
He does act as if he owns the club.
Yeah, and that's the problem.
Yes.
He acts like he owns the club, and that's the problem.
Yeah.
So
I need to take this call, guys. Hey, excuse me. This is a phone call I've been waiting all day for.
Jump back on when you're finished. MRI.
Hello.
Okay, Joe.
Hello there, Dr. Scalacci.
If that's Peter, tell him I said hi.
I'm fine.
So we'll let Joe have an opinion on this anyway. That was a bit of an interesting debate there. I think it's hard to judge whether Pat likes or dislikes Peter Lawwell. I don't know which it is. So, Joe, what's your opinion on the state of affairs and what Pat has had to say?
First of all, I don't butt in and interrupt people the way he does. But I'm not suggesting, okay, don't go tree hugging with Peter Lill. Have tea and biscuits with him, like the Celtic fans forum, like Joe O'Rourke going along every couple of months, getting his tummy tickled, told what a great Celtic man he is. And the Celtic Trust, I think they've got meetings with him and nothing comes of it. So anyone trying to have a dialogue with a guy that's been in charge of the football club for best part of 22 years, from chief executive on 285,000 to chief executive on £3.5 million. Everyone at the club has been appointed by him or appointed by someone that he appointed. So, Pat was involved with Resolution 12. Lowell spun them along for years and years. Yeah, we're going after the SFA. Yeah, give us a smoking gun. Give us this, give us that. I think we can all join the dots now. And Resolution 12 was something that Celtic Football Club, under Peter Lill, had no interest in whatsoever. They weren't interested in fair play. They weren't interested in a level playing field in Scottish football. They weren't interested in financial fair play, football sustainability. All they want is four matches a season. They're good business partners from Ibrox. So, I'm surprised at Pat, but each to their own. They're all entitled to their opinion. I'll not butt in and speak over anyone. But anyone thinking that you can have any meaningful dialogue with Peter Lill and say, yes, we hear you, you're kidding yourself on. There is no way that Celtic will be progressing the way that the North Curve statement and those seven key questions, they're not going to be answered meaningfully with the same people in charge. The guy that's been there for the guy that's been there since October 2003, and we've won one UEFA knockout match since then. So Pat can come back in and ramble away, but it's nonsense most of the stuff. And on the UEFA thing, he's a big hitter in UEFA. He's an absolute entity in UEFA, and he is nothing in UEFA. He's a committee member on the European Club Association. There are 24 committee members in the European Club Association. There's over 400 clubs in the European Club Association, including Hamilton Accies, Spartans, Montrose Women's. And if you want to know how big a hitter he is in UEFA, there's six English clubs in the Champions League this season, and the Champions of Scotland and many other countries had to go through qualifying. So if that's Big Peter throwing his weight about because he's a big hitter in Europe, just as well as he's not taking a back seat because his impact on UEFA is non-existent.
Okay. So, lads, I think like our first subject there has taken us... Yeah, our first subject there...
Well, good.
Can we go to the membership scheme?
Yeah, we need to discuss FSR and also the membership scheme. So, Pat, if you want to give us a bit of insight into what your idea for the membership scheme is, fire away.
Basically, it's to bring the support together, you know. There's sort of two parts of it. It's a supporter thing, and it's totally supporter funded. It's totally independent of Celtic. And see, the more I think about it, the more excited I get about it, because see if we can get the numbers up, because that's what will matter, numbers. If you get the numbers up, and in the model, I've actually got 20,000 season ticket holders and 20,000 global viewers of Celtic. Now, the point about the template is you can adjust it to say, if we do that, how much will it do the next thing? But the main thing is numbers. The Celtic Star asked me last week, they come back and says, look, we're not this, but here's some questions and answers. So if you want to look at the site, you'll actually see what they are. But in fact, I took it out and came out in bold, because when I was making the answer, it was numbers. You know, the question was, how will it work? How will it go? And I said numbers. Because if you're able to pull in the views of, I know it's a big wide support, but see, eventually as you pull them in, you'll start to see themes developing, right? And when you see the themes developing, you can then, as a group, and here's the point about it as well, it actually makes the bloggers, it gives them the ability to, if you like, go to Celtic to act, as opposed to just typing and saying this is what's wrong, they can actually go and say, look, this is the situation. This is what we think about it. And that takes you into your shadow board territory, which is part of the statement from the collective, you know. And they had a statement, the collective, which was, and I must need to get the exact words, but it was setting up a membership, a democratic, independent scheme, you know. So, I put it this way, it's an idea I have. It's not one I want to see through. I'm hoping that James, now that he's on the committee, will give it a fair shout. Because if I was pushing it, I think I might get some pushback. Because there'll be folk on there who will not see past me and see the issues. You know. So it's just, that's you know, the thing is, there's so many benefits could come from it. The biggest problem is funding it. But even then I thought, well, hang on a minute. If somebody come back and says that we want to do this, what you do, I would say the first thing you do is to get crowdfunding to get what I used to do was called a feasibility study. And the feasibility study looks and says, how sensible is this idea? Can it work? They would do things like doing surveys and go out to folk and say, look, if we provided you with the service, would you be willing to buy into it? This is what we would do. That would be the first step in that process, you know. And that's where you know, the collective guys who are taking this particular element on. And the other side about it as well is it leaves nobody out. It doesn't take away, if you like, say, the Celtic Trust attempts to get shares. Because here's the thing. See, if you're able to get a big number of people saying, I'll buy into that, how many of them might be lost shareholders? So, you actually help them build up that. You might even decide, as a collective group, actually buying shares is a good idea. And if we charge that amount, a pound of that, and I was only talking about £5 a month limit, which I think was some like the CSD, were charging for their membership. Can't remember now, but I know there was a fee, maybe just a tenner a year. Can't remember. But say £5 a month, and I've got another one that says a pound a month. And for a pound a month, you'll get that, and for £5 a month, you'll get that. You know, part of that is having legal representation, because one of the things I said is, and I found this at Res 12, there's nothing like opening doors than getting a letter in. It's got a company, a law company's at the top of it. My clients, the Celtic Collective, have asked me to raise this issue on their behalf. And the other side of it is, and you know, Joe, you can laugh about this one, but you could actually go direct to the police and say, we represent 40,000 or 20,000 Celtic supporters that were kettled last week. We would like to know why you did what you did, under what instructions. You don't have to wait for Celtic to do it.
There it is.
Right? You know, you bypass that. You take responsibility for it. You know, but you actually become... So at the end of the day, it was one of the things, again, I learned a long time ago. A resolution that was put up, Celtic ran me it. Because they were able to go to the SFA and say, look, this isn't us that's making the complaints. It was a bit, believe it or not, accountability and transparency. So you have an idea who wrote it, right?
So, they
went to this. Oh, but did James, it says, and we want the video review panel changed, and that happened, right? You know, but it's like that. But what was interesting for that was Celtic went to the SFA, and Joe Rock was involved with me in this, by the way. So it was just myself, right? Yeah, Joe involved, and Jeanette Finlay was involved as well. All the guys were all sort of part, at the time. This is 2011, Joe, different thing, right? Part of that. But what I recognise for that is that when Lobo went, they were able to say to the SFA, this isn't us that's making the dance. This is our supporters. If you don't answer their quest, we're the ones that's going to get it in the neck. So you better do something. So independence, you know. I mean, am I on a soapbox selling this here? Because that's what it feels like. But I think actually that needs to be done. It's an idea that needs to be sold, and if it's feasible, and to find if it's feasible, crowdfund, find out how much a feasibility study would cost. You know, there must be enough contacts within the Celtic family to give you an idea where to go to get that, And they come back and say, well, it'll cost you 10, 20, whatever it is. I don't know. And then put that on. And then when that comes back, that informs the next steps for the collective to take. And that's the point. That's not an immediate fix. And this is what I was saying. You're not going to get an immediate fix. You're not going to get, put this way, I think you will see resignations at the AGM. But I don't think that'll make any, I don't think that matters. What matters is carrying on, providing the means through that membership scheme of preventing the split. Because that's what that's my point. I'm dead against anything that divides.
Pat, you know. I need to let James talk. James wants to say his piece on this as well.
Pat has been talking about a membership scheme for as long as I've known him, and that's about 15 years now, right? And when he first spoke about this, it was a ditch I would have died in. I'm not joking. To prevent it, it's a ditch I would have died in. Because at the time I said it would create a two-tier support, it would be inextricably linked to the club. And I saw a version of what MyGels later on became, right? But the best thing about this one, straight away, is that it is not waiting for the club's permission, and it does not depend on the club's backing in any way, shape or form. Its independence for the club is what makes it a really good idea. And my concern about a two-tier support, the more I got to know about the issue and the deeper I dug in, the more frustrated I got with the way certain things work, the more clear it became that, in fact, we've got a support fragmented into loads of different groups and loads of different organisations, and we effectively have a two-tier support in some ways anyway, even a three, four-tier support. We've got fans who are shareholders, we've got fans who are season ticket holders, we've got fans who buy every bit of merchandise they can get but can't go to games. There are fans who support the club but don't go to games and don't buy merchandise either because they can't or because they won't. And so the support is fragmented and split anyway along various different lines. And what a membership scheme does at this point is it lets every single person who wants to make a contribution and who wants to be part of a coherent, unified voice get on that ladder, whether they're a fan who doesn't go, whether they're a fan who goes every week, whether they're a shareholder, whether they're a season ticket holder, whatever it is, and it gives everybody an equal say. And that actually is about as far from creating a two-tier system as you'll get, and I love it. And I would wholeheartedly support it. And what I love about the way the collective is working so far is that finally it's got all the people who can make that happen in the same room, and it's got them thinking seriously about what that would look like. And I think it's an idea whose time has come, and it's overdue.
Can I say two things, James? Right, it's a membership service. It's
yeah,
no scheme.
We've talked about it for a while.
Aye. No, so, and the other side I was going to say is, in fact, it was a lot of your objections that made me rethink. And at a light bulb moment when I went, hang on a minute, we don't go to Celtic with this.
Yeah, no.
We go to the support. So you actually were responsible in some ways for me looking at it in a different direction, you know. And that's what happens when you listen to people. You hear things, oh, I never thought of that. And you think, oh, wait a minute, there's another way, you know. So it's a membership service. And the other point about that is because it's a service, you can actually tell if it's working or not. Because that's how you need some paid employees. You need somebody to be responsible for delivering the service. Yeah. You know. And I've shoved costs for that into the template as well. But as I said, the first thing would be a feasibility study, then get a costing. And then once you've got, you know, if you like, I kind of thought a credible. If you, once you've got, you know, a credible idea of what you can actually do, it's then a matter of how can we get the money to pay the folk. And if you get an estimate of how many people are going to join a fiver a month, you know, you think, well, hang on a minute, I can do that, I can do that, I can do that. You can buy shares if the thick people say that's a good idea. And it brings everybody together, which is my aim in life. I know, Don Bloody Quixote.
No, it's an excellent idea. It's something that has to come out of this. Some kind of permanent fan body has to come out of this. And I like the fact that it's being talked about seriously and people are seriously pursuing it. And I think that will definitely happen. Whatever else happens, that definitely will.
Okay, we'll move on to the next subject on our agenda. I think we've talked a fair bit about the membership scheme. So yeah. I want to look across the city. And the game on Saturday, we all knew that the neck was in a noose for the manager at Ibrox. There's definitely no two ways about that. If he lost the game against Hibs, Russell Martin was gone, or so many people believed anyway. But what I want to kind of get, I want to get Joe's opinion on what he thought of the protest to try and get rid of, to push getting rid of Patrick Stewart and Russell Martin. Because in comparison to what we displayed at Fir Hill yesterday, I think the protest at Ibrox on Saturday was pretty shambolic. So, Joe, what was your opinion on things at Ibrox? And obviously, we've all been told Nico Raskin being back has saved the day and that Russell Martin should have played him all along. But in terms of the protest that they put out there, what was your opinion on that?
I was delighted. I thought it was fantastic. It was good to see the true bear show themselves up. That's exactly how they are. So we've got lots of people that try and dress it up as some sort of nice club and passionate and this, that, and the next thing. They're pretty similar to the right-wing mob that were in Glasgow city centre on Saturday outside Buchanan galleries. They're drawn from the same DNA pool, and for reasons known only to Michael Nicholson and Peter Lille, Celtic are always trying to cuddle up with them, whether it's the Sydney Super Cup or other scams that they come up with. But it was great to see the fans really express themselves. The video coverage outside was fantastic. The levels of hatred was out of this world. I mean, there's a chant about Russell Martin, why don't you go home? I'm not quite sure where home's meant to be. So it was great to see them in all their glory. And then to contrast it the next day with reasoned arguments from Celtic supporters holding up posters, and some elderly people might not like some of the chants from the Celtic support, but the main chant to come out from Sunday was all Celtic fans against the board. And that's perfectly civilised, perfectly reasonable, and it goes back to a previous campaign. So the contrast was stark. Those animals, they were baying dogs. And it was great that they were outside the dressing room windows. That Russell's certainly a tree hugger. Peter Lille might not be a tree hugger. Russell likes tree hugging. He likes yoga. He likes going wild swimming, all that sort of stuff. So he found out, he already knows, he's quite happy. He knows what that fan base is like. He knows what their supporters are like. And the players, so, some of them couldn't care less, but any player in that dressing room that's wanting to understand a little bit about the culture they've got themselves into, then that was naked hatred. And it was a great contrast, that mob going crazy on Saturday and the specific issues getting raised by the Celtic support in a sensible way. And as I say, that chant, all Celtic fans against the board, compare that to what was going on at Ibrox on Saturday. So that's my tuppence worth from that mob.
And how about you, James? What was your view on all happenings at Ibrox Way on Saturday?
Well, I read two separate columns today which have brought home to me that a penny is dropping in the media. Bill Leckie talked about it being, let me see if I get this right. I want to get the quote right because I thought the quote was interesting. Tedious, ugly, and classless. But that was in relation to the two demonstrations, not just theirs. And when I read that headline on the BBC gossip column, I thought for a minute, tedious, ugly, and classless. He's caught a glimpse of himself in the mirror, hasn't he? But apparently not, no. He was just talking about fans. And what was clear about his column, and what was later clear reading Jackson's column, is it's clicked for these people finally, that this is getting really dangerous and this is getting really heavy. And they are scared. Because they've spent weeks and maybe even months stoking this fire, and now it's out of control, and they're scared about what might happen. Because that really was ugly, and it really was seriously scary if you were the person who was at the centre of it, or you were one of the people at the centre of it, because they're not even discriminating against Martin at this point. They've turned their ire on directors who've only been in the job less than a year, and they're already getting a neck, and there's already demands for them to swing in off. So it's out of control. And some in the media have realised that, and they've realised the role they've played in it, and they're scared, and they should be scared. Because if something terrible happens here, they're going to bear some of the responsibility for it. Because I've really never quite seen anything like this. It's the most vicious and visceral campaign I've ever seen launched against any manager in this country. And it's amazing to me that it's not even a Celtic manager that they've done this to, because it's usually your managers that they try and get this to. But to just destroy this guy the way they have, it's phenomenal. It's terrible. It's really dreadful. It's one of the things that a lot of people in Scottish football might look back on with a great deal of shame eventually. And some of them have realised that, and they are really worried about it.
Well, to be fair, I think that Brendan Rodgers' defence of Russell Martin on Friday was very admirable. I mean, he was outstanding, and it shows how empathetic a guy that Brendan actually is. And, the way he analysed the team bonding that they did, and actually expressed the fact that Celtic were involved in team bonding as well, but that it didn't raise any opinions in the media because Celtic aren't under the spotlight. Like, you know, Celtic and Brendan Rodgers aren't under the spotlight for that reason, as in the same way that Russell Martin is. And I think, like, Russell Martin is... I don't feel sorry for anybody. I don't generally feel sorry for anybody involved in the Ibrox operation in any way, shape or form. But this guy, you can't help but feel sorry for him the way he's being treated. Because he must be one hell of a thick-skinned guy to stand what he's been getting at Ibrox. Because it's off the scale. It's hateful beyond belief. And, I mean, the fact of the matter was, the guy was on a hiding to nothing from day one. He never had a chance, but I knew he had a tough job ahead of him, but by Jesus, I never thought that I would see the level of vitriol that's been aimed at him, aimed at any manager. I've never seen this in Scotland, ever. I don't even think Paul Le Guin got it that bad.
No.
You know? So I think there, and this constant attacking and sniping from the sidelines from Barry Ferguson and Neil McCann and Billy Dodds and all these guys. I mean, I was reading Keith Jackson's opinion today on the whole situation. Keith Jackson just tried to say that Nico Raskin's goal was out of Barry Ferguson's playbook. That was pathetic. Like, just because James Tavernier put an outswinger of a corner and Nico Raskin got his head on it, that's Barry Ferguson. Barry Ferguson's name is written all over that. So, like, Barry Ferguson is an expert because he told James Tavernier to put an outswinging corner on top of Nico Raskin's head. I mean, it's pathetic, like, to read this shit. And it is shit. And I'm not going to, you know, sugarcoat it in any way, shape, or form. And the coordinated attack, and I wrote an article on it last week, like, Barry Ferguson is probably orchestrating all of this in the Daily Record offices. It's obscene. Yeah, it's obscene. You know, what's going on. And it brings shame on the Scottish game. It really does, like, you know, look, they've been called Scotland's shame for obvious reasons. They bring shame on the game in Scotland anyway. But this is just, it paints a really, really bad picture of our game. And the fan base at Ibrox believe that they can swing the board to do their bidding. And I think they're going to be sorely mistaken on that one. I think the Americans have, like, literally circled the wagons and said, you guys are not, you're not doing this. You're not telling us how to do our job. You know?
Yeah, absolutely. Can I ask James something? Because I didn't see the actual thing itself. But getting back to the media, how much do you think that the part they played by building up the sale to the Americans is going to make a big difference? How much do you think that played in the anger? Because you know they were expecting miracles, and your stuff, but you must have said, you know, it's not going to happen. That's not going to happen.
No, it's never going to happen.
It's not going to happen. But they created a belief among some of their support that it was, you know. the way I look at it is I think the Americans can make a profit out of Rangers, but not the way they did. You know, I mean, put it this way: see if they lost 10,000 of their support, you know, you know what I mean. You know, the ones that you would be quite happy to lose if we'd ended them at Celtic Park, you know, you just think, oh no, they're not doing us any favors. If they lost that and ended up with a support of 35 or 40,000, they'll still outspend any of the other clubs in Scotland by Celtic.
Yeah.
They'll still give us a game with that size of support, the same way at Hearts and Hibs can, right? You know. And they'll still produce a return for the Americans. And the wee thing that bothers me a bit is when I watch the game, you know, because I always like to watch and hope that they're not going to win. You know, who doesn't, right? I'll be honest. but I thought to myself, that the lad is the Gassami, the winger, right? That came into PSG. And I thought, why did we not get him? You know, why did
we not get him? Because we got Tunecti.
Eventually, but what I'm saying is, looking at that guy, he scored about two or three goals in the qualifying rounds. So he did, you know. And he was quite, you know, he was certainly, when I watched, he was the most dangerous of players. You know, I put it this way, he looked to me as at least as good as Yang. So, I'm not putting him up. And there's some youngsters playing as well. And some of those youngsters look as if they were good. And they actually beat Hibs 2-0. And one of the reasons they beat Hibs is because Hibs played open. Hibs played open and left themselves wide, you know, left gaps that Rangers were able to exploit. So I don't know whether that result will change people's minds. It certainly, I think, has bought Martin a bit of time.
No, he's done.
You know, done. You know,
there's nothing going to change their minds about him. They started it with a preconceived notion of him as some veggie, vegan, Buddhist. They are not going to change that at all. All he's done, by the way, taking them wild swimming and walking in the hills has confirmed that he does not fit in, that he is not one of them. He is not culturally aligned with their club, and they're right, it's nothing like that.
But do you think the guys
that's why this isn't just opposition to a manager who started badly? That's why this is hatred. This is, you are not one of us.
Well, that's a fair one. I mean, I wouldn't argue with
that. As to the Americans, I think that they, I never understood what the purpose was. I never understood what there are ways to make money out of that club, but they come with so much toxicity and they come with so much hassle that there must be easier ways to make your money. Really. And if they didn't think they were good diligence properly and they didn't realise what it was at the time, they know you're... I wrote a piece back after the Bush pre-season friendly and I said, listen to that sound that you heard at halftime. That's the soundtrack for your whole season. And that's exactly what it's going to be. The sound of booing, the sound of get to fuck, that's their lives from now on. That's all they're going to get. Because they people that over there will never be satisfied. They'll never be happy. They started it with a preconceived notion of what this takeover was going to look like. They were talking, as one of the guys on there said, about Arteta's and Mourinho's. And the three-person shortlist that they ended up with was...
Ancelotti, Gerrard,
right? Yeah, a guy who's followed his dad around for his whole career, that's never managed a single first team game, and Russell Martin. So the shock should have come there, and the realization should have dawned there, but it didn't. And then they went and signed a bunch of English lower league players to try and get through to the Champions League and challenge Celtic, and it was insane. And you know what do you call him? Was it Stuart who went on their club TV channel the other day and tried to pretend that they'd spent 20 million net when the actual figure's about 4? So, I mean, it's turning out exactly as we thought it would. You know, the takeover might have cost a lot of money. The rebuild's been done on the cheap and you can see the results. And the manager, who else was going to go there after the average lifespan of an Ibrox manager dropped to under a year? And now they're going to wrap this one to under 6 months. It's incredible.
Do you think Barry Ferguson coming back would make all the difference?
No.
Barry Ferguson thinks coming back makes all the difference. That's one of the reasons why this guy's been getting it in the net since the day he got the job. Because Barry Ferguson and his wee buddies in the media are all like, oh, you could have done it better, Barry.
So would you say they're deluded?
I better look at Bob, that's what he's got.
James, would you say they're deluded?
They've always been deluded. They've always been deluded. They're spending every waking moment of their life still deluded. They live in a permanent fantasy. I said, I'm writing about this just now. Patrick Stewart did his first press conference that guy ever did. At the end of it, they were all raging, and Keith Jackson nearly blew a gasket writing about it. Oh, he had nothing good to say. He had no good news for us. Right. His fucking job to deliver good news. For the first time, somebody sat down in front of their media channel and told some cold, hard truth. That's why his face is in one of the wee circles a lot, because he told the truth. And Dave on here, who's dying to ask what the difference between what we saw for them on Saturday and what we saw for Celtic fans is. I can tell you what the difference is right now. What you saw outside Ibrox was hatred. That's not what you saw on Sunday. This is protest. They're protesting because intolerant people who can't catch Celtic. We're protesting because we've got genuine concerns about the future of our club, and we want to see a progressive, proper, strategic direction. You're going to get to different reasons for protesting.
Yeah, I'm just going to move on to our next point on tonight's pod, guys, because I think it's clear where it's headed at Ibrox. I think it's going to end up in utter disaster. And I think, you know, these protests, as you said, are solely based on hatred. And there's nothing else behind them. But the board have been, I feel, also weaponizing, our board have been weaponizing the threat of, you know, where we have pulled out of the HCTS scheme and we've decided that we're not going to buy merchandise and so on and so forth unless we get them to speak. But I feel that they're going to try and weaponize that against the fan base and basically say, if you don't spend, we're going to downsize. And that's not the way to handle this situation. What's your opinion on that, Joe? I mean, what do you think is going to come of this if the fans do start pulling out, you know, pulling away monetary support? What do you think is going to happen? With what kind of reaction are we going to get from the board? Do you believe that they're going to weaponize it and try and use it against the fan base and say that we're downsizing because you're doing this? Or are they going to? I personally don't have any faith in them reacting the right way to this anyway. Do you?
It's nothing new. I mean, they'll invest and spend the absolute minimum. So if there's less money coming in, they'll just do the exact same. I mean, we've had three successive seasons in the Champions League. And if you look at the state of the Celtic squad today, can you see the benefits of that? So I don't really quite see the weaponizing it as if that's it. We're going to dumb down, lads. That's clearly the direction they're going in. Next season's manager won't be getting anything. Next season's manager might get a 3-year contract. It's the same money as a current manager gets in 1 year. So that's the direction of travel. It's been very upsetting for them to have a highly paid, ambitious manager in the last 2 and a bit years, and they'll be much happier getting back to the comfortable days where income's less than 100 million, playing in the Europa League, some sort of treat that you should be pleased about. So I don't think there's much in it, and it's up to each individual supporter. If you want to go and watch Braga next Thursday at 5:45, great, go for it. If you're a season ticket holder, you bought a package. If you're not a season ticket holder and you think that's a good way to spend £45, wire in. There'll be more Adidas launches coming. And if you think that makes you a right good Celtic man by getting the latest Adidas kit and wearing it at the gym, wearing it at the pub, wearing it on holiday, great, go for it. But I don't really see the argument. Just the money that comes in, the Celtic board will spend as little as possible of that, protect their bank balance, and hopefully stay a few points ahead of their old firm business partners. So it's part of the overall picture. And while Peter Lowell and his placemen, Nicholson and Mackay, are around, that's just the way it's going to be. It's not a great change of policy, not a change of direction.
How about you, James? What's your feeling on it?
Well, I know how Pat feels about this in terms of financial sustainability, and that any boycott or anything that we do is going to feature into us being closer to the line and will necessitate cuts. But I'll tell you how I feel about that. I've heard enough Spookhouse bullshit from the Celtic board earlier years on this matter to recognise it when I hear it. And I try and think about this, if you guys will forgive me again, in historical and political and geopolitical analogy. We keep getting told that we have to be prepared for a war with Russia. This is the big scare story of our age. We have to be prepared for a war with Russia, or a war with China, or a war with fucking somebody. Mm-hmm. Anybody really who can help the defence industry can sell more guns and keep certain people in jobs. And I always say the same thing. It would take a colossal failure of politics, imagination, humanity, decency, and basic competence for us ever to end up in that situation. I mean, you're talking about multiple failures on multiple levels of governance and everything for us to end up in a place where we're at war again with somebody in a major way. And I feel exactly the same about this. They can scare us with this all they like, right? But it will take multiple levels of failure on their part before that happens. Multiple levels of failure. Failure to engage, failure to discuss, failure to be reasonable, failure to show ambition, and failure perhaps even to step aside, right? And if they can show some flex in some of those areas, it will never come to that. It will never come to the point where there'll be a wholesale boycott of the Home Cup ticket scheme or a withdrawal from it. It will never come to the stage where Celtic Park will be three quarters empty if they behave responsibly and reasonably. And they don't do it. Their fans have no other choice. It will take a spectacular failure on their part for any of that ever to come about. And it's up to them what happens. They can't hold the fans responsible for a downsizing that they themselves have brought on and that they themselves will enact. That's the truth of it. They will have to fail even more massively than they've already failed for that to happen.
Can I have a view on that?
Yeah.
There was no chance of Celtic not complying with FSR, would you call it, this season. Right? I'll put it this way, last season, because it was 90%, so there's plenty of room, you know. And the income was really high, 124 million. There is no chance of them, it was 80% last season, there's no chance of them not complying this season, because what happens is the accounts that are produced go to the SFA in January or February or earlier, and the assessment is done against those accounts, right? The money that's in those accounts, that's where the assessment starts. This season, I assumed it was going to be 80% because it was last year's money, but in point of fact, it was pointed out to me, and I found it in the EFA website, it'll be
70%. Yeah, 70%.
We'll still have a 70% problem now, but when it comes to next season, when the income, because we've not got CL money, and I'm only basing it on that, right? But because they haven't got CL money, that means that the gap will close because you'll be 70%, and if your income's come down, the calculation of the gap will close. But do you know why they'll never be compliant? Because they'll make sure that they sell players to keep the earnings up, that keeps them compliant.
They sell players anyway. They do it every year.
But that's why they've always done it.
Sell my Eden in the summer. I expect us to sell my Eden in January. So,
James, see looking back.
Then Carter Vickers will go. There's already talk about how much Alistair Johnson will go for. And that's what they'll always do.
But regardless
of whether there's money in the bank or not.
They were doing that before FSR come in.
Correct.
They've been doing it all along. No, they did it all along. But the reason that is all FSR has done is actually to bring in, if you like, figures that you can quantify. And the other side as well is before FSR come in, my friends across the river were spending money that wasn't they didn't, you know, that wasn't coming for football. And one of the reasons that they're in a pickle as well is the fact that they can't go and buy the Andre Flows the way they used to. You know, those days have totally gone, you know.
Yeah.
But they've been following the same policy for years. Because what I was trying to work out was, how does this affect recruitment? That was basically the way I was coming from. And I knew there was no chance of no failure now, no failure then. But I did think, even though I've not got the figures, it stands to reason, if the income drops and the player costs rise, the gap gets smaller, right? And the other side is, Celtic have got the figures, because the only thing I've been able to sort of use, Swiss Ramble used the same, was the top line figure. There's a guess at what the squad costs are. A lot of guess. And the thing is as well, see the accounts. I haven't actually looked at what's under the... There's a headline. I've not looked at the accounts because I'm not an accountant, you know. But they have not in the past stated the wage bill in the sense of this is the player squad wage bill and this is the staff's wage bill.
That's no transparent. They never differentiate that figure. They never published it.
But you know Rangers do.
Yeah, I know.
Aye, Rangers do, right, you know. So that makes it difficult to actually be accurate.
The last time, they'll never do it again. You'll never see a single verified number for that club ever again.
No. Well, I think there's a point there, but I disagree with him. There is a degree of transparency, you know. And if it's a shareholder, I'd be putting a question in. Is, you know, there's a facility to do it. Why do Rangers let us know the difference, and why don't you? You know, what's the commercial and confidence aspect that they're not bothered about that you are?
Yeah, that we're close to violating the FSR line. That's why they don't disclose it. They don't want to disclose it. They don't want to show how far away we are.
I know.
Okay, guys, anyway, we've got a bit over time.
Right. I'll need to shoot anyway, guys.
Okay. Maybe no worries, Pat. All right, thanks for coming on. Bye-bye. Okay, guys, back to the three of us. We'll finish it up with the Red Star Belgrade game on Wednesday night and predictions. I'm personally holding out for a nil-all draw. We think that will probably be reasonable. How about you, Joe? What's your opinion? What do you think we're going to do in Belgrade on Wednesday night?
It's a match that doesn't really mean very much. From what I've gathered, they've won 7 out of 7 domestic matches. I would think they'll win 2-0. You don't go from playing Kilmarnock and Partick Thistle to dealing with a competent... I think they're the champions. They dropped at the Champions League qualifiers, so they'll be quite up for it. They'll be motivated. We're on a slide. We're on the way down. It's not as if this is a club on the up that can look and aspire to go far in the Europa League. So I would expect Celtic to lose 2-0. And the Europa League's a distraction. The main thing this season is to get the league won. We're going to lose our manager, and then we'll see what the mayhem comes in the summer.
Okay. Now, how about you, James?
I'm with you on this. I cannot think of a European game in recent history that I care less about. I've got to be honest, and I hate saying it. I'm all man's way over there, and I would. And if Paulina wasn't coming on Wednesday, I would be over there as well. Just because I love the experience of going to European away games, but I cannot get up for this at all. I cannot find any motivation for it whatsoever.
I don't think I'll even go to the Sports Club for it.
There are a lot of our fans who've said for a few years that they would have loved, that they think that we're a Europa League level team and that we would do very well in the Europa League, and they would, and they've kind of cursed the fact that we've not had a chance to play against some of the teams in that tournament, and we've been fighting it out with the big guns. And while I understand the sentiment, I disagree with it. We look like a Europa League team this year, and we look like a really poor Europa League team this year. There's still too many holes in the squad for me, and there are still too many areas where we're nowhere near as good as we would have been even 12 months ago. You put that team 12 months ago in the Europa League, and we would have done things.
We'd have walked, yeah.
To this game tomorrow. But one of the reasons why I can't get up for it is that we're not even close to being as good a side. Yeah, and I don't expect any big miracle to be worked here at all. I think the board has done a tremendous job. If the tremendous job they were trying to do was to hamstring the manager as much as possible, they've certainly done well there.
Yeah. Well, look, that brings us to a close tonight, guys. It's been an interesting show. A different show, we put it that way. Pat liked to talk, that's for sure. So, but we will reconvene next week. And as usual, we've had 250 on the live show again tonight, so a strong presence on the live show. It looks like we amused quite a few of our commenters, that's for sure. There was healthy debate, I suppose you could say. So we've had some fantastic response over the last few weeks or so. We've got an awful lot of more people have subscribed, which has been brilliant. So we'd like to keep that going. We're pushing for the 2K mark. That's the next benchmark. So hopefully we get over the line there and get ourselves up to 2K and push on from there. So I'll leave you go for tonight, lads. Thanks a million for the contribution. And once again, thanks to Pat, even though he's gone, for coming on the show. And we will talk to you guys next week. Enjoy. Talk to you then.